Hi, this is Dr. Mike Chupp, and you are listening to CMDA Matters, the weekly podcast of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. This week's episode is a presentation that was made recently to our CMDA Board of Trustees during their winter meeting in Washington, D.C. We were honored to be joined by Mr. Luke Goodrich, who is the Vice President and Senior Counsel at Beckett Law, where he represents religious organizations and individuals who are involved in religious liberty disputes in courts across our country. And that includes the U.S. Supreme Court. He is an adjunct professor at the University of Utah Quinney College of Law, where he teaches constitutional law. He's also the award-winning author of Free to Believe, The Battle Over Religious Liberty in America. That's a book which has helped thousands of Americans understand why religious freedom matters, how it is threatened, and how we can protect it. His presentation to the board was a powerful and in-depth look at the important role that CMDA now plays in protecting conscience freedoms in healthcare. And I specifically wanted to share his presentation with you, our listeners, on CMDA Matters. So would you please listen in as Luke shares with our CMDA Board of Trustees on why our engagement in healthcare-related advocacy as ambassadors of Christ is so critical right now.
What I was hoping to cover today is just three topics. Number one, what are the major threats to the freedom to care right now in the United States, especially the legal threats? Number two, why does it matter? Why should CMDA care about these threats? And number three, why is CMDA so essential and strategic in this particular fight? And I was going to start with some sort of joke about doctors and lawyers. It should be easy fodder, but I'm really bad at thinking of jokes. And so to be a little more personal, I'll just start with my reading from this morning. I've been following the Catholic lectionary. I'm not Catholic, but the reading was from Hebrews 10, and it just seemed very appropriate in light of last night. It's, "Remember the days past when, after you had been enlightened, you endured a great contest of suffering. At times you were publicly exposed to abuse and affliction. At other times you associated yourselves with those so treated. You even joined in the sufferings of those in prison and joyfully accepted the confiscation of your property, knowing that you had a better and lasting possession. Therefore, do not throw away your confidence. It will have great recompense. You need endurance to do the will of God and receive what he has promised." And there's kind of three commands or admonitions in there. The first is to remember. Remember when you endured this great contest of suffering, were publicly exposed to humiliation and aligned yourselves with those who were. I mean, these are Christians who are facing persecution in Roman times that we can't imagine, but, you know, doctors here in the U.S. and healthcare professionals are also facing that public humiliation, particularly around these issues of conscience. And then the second is, therefore, do not throw away your confidence. And I loved what Ambassador Brownback said last night. We're on the side of truth. At Beckett, we're not worried about the future of religious freedom. We're not in fear. We're in a place of joyful confidence because, we know we serve a God who's already won the victory. And then third, you need endurance. And I think that's so key in these fights because it's not a five-year project. It's a 50-year project. So I just thought that was, from my reading this morning, just spoke to me, and I thought I wanted to start there. So first, what are the top threats to the freedom to care in the United States? I don't think I have to spend a ton of time on this. I mean, I think you guys probably know it better than I do. I think of the threats. I have a scheme for thinking of the threats. I want to kind of test it out, see if that works for you guys. So I think of the big three: abortion, transgender, and suicide. There's like five different sources of threats to the freedom to care. There's government. So you could have the government say, you must perform an abortion, or you must perform a gender transition, or else we're going to take away your Medicare and Medicaid funding. So some of these threats, they come from the government. Some come from your employer. If you work for a state medical system. I've spoken with doctors who've been threatened with the loss of their job if they didn't participate, if they didn't toe the line on transgender issues. So you got government, you got your employers. Sometimes the threat comes from your patients. I've assisted a number of Catholic healthcare institutions that have been threatened or sued by their patients. Patient comes in, says, I want to transition to living as a man. Give me a hysterectomy. And the Catholic hospital says, I'm sorry, we can't do that. And the plaintiff has sued. There are multiple lawsuits. The patient has sued. So government, employer, your patient, sometimes your employees. I helped represent a Catholic hospital who had a doctor that worked for the hospital. The doctor qualified the patient for suicide under Colorado's assisted suicide statute, knowing that the Catholic hospital wouldn't do this, and then sued the hospital saying, you're violating Colorado law for not allowing my patient to terminate his life. And so that's an example of a threat that can come from an employee. And then lastly, I think the professional associations like ACOG, I mean, they're actively trying to change the standard of care so that the traditional practice of medicine is viewed as unethical or wrong, and they can threaten licensing and other penalties. So those, I think of those five sources, and then government, employer, a sixth.
The media.
Media, yeah. And the media wants to create an environment that demonizes doctors who practice in this traditional way. So these threats can come, I think it's helpful to think of the different sources and then also the different areas. So abortion, you already mentioned, kind of the traditional threat of forced participation where the government might come after you. I mean, I think abortion is the one area of these three it's the oldest. You know, it's been an issue since at least the 70s, if not before. It's also probably the clearest in law. We have a bunch of very clear federal laws, the Church Amendment, the Weldon Amendment, the Coates-Snow Amendment, that ever since Roe versus Wade, I mean, the same day the Supreme Court decided Roe versus Wade, they decided Doe versus Bolton, which upheld a state's law on conscience protections in abortion and said you can't be forced to participate in abortion in violation of your conscience. So we have pretty good laws on abortion right now. And we don't have a lot of, you know, government entities directly trying to force doctors and hospitals to perform abortions, but we have gross under-enforcement of those laws on abortion. And so you get employers, institutions, peers, and just an environment that pressures healthcare professionals to participate in abortion. A couple other lawsuits we've seen. One is the ACLU a number of years ago sued a religious hospital system saying, you're violating EMTALA. I don't know if you're familiar with EMTALA, Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. And saying that if you won't provide an abortion in certain circumstances, you're violating federal law. And CMDA actually intervened in that lawsuit a number of years ago to defend the hospital. But HHS, in recent years, after the overturning of Roe versus Wade, has started making noises about reviving that argument that, hey, you know, your state law may prohibit abortion, but EMTALA, federal law, trumps state law, and there may be circumstances where you have to perform an abortion. So that's an example of the government, HHS, starting to make noises about you may have to perform abortions in certain circumstances. I think the other move we're seeing is toward mail order, you know, prescription abortion pills, sometimes sent across state lines. And I think what comes with that is pharmacists. I mean, you have some pharmacist members. And to what extent are governments going to force pharmacists to dispense abortion-causing drugs in violation of their conscience? And we at Beckett, together with ADF, had a case a number of years ago for pharmacists in Washington State who didn't want to give out the morning after and the week after pill. And the state of Washington said, you have to do that. And I think that's going to become a bigger and bigger issue as abortion moves toward, you know, pharmaceutical practice. And then lastly, I think crisis pregnancy centers. I don't know if any of you work with crisis pregnancy centers, but in the wake of the overturning of Roe, we're seeing a number of state governments. New York, for example, passed a statute requiring disclosures and allowing the state to investigate what it called limited service pregnancy centers. Basically, if you won't refer for an abortion, which is crisis pregnancy centers won't do, then the state can come in, examine your books, and go through everything you do with a fine-tooth comb and find other violations and shut you down. We also represented a pregnancy center in Baltimore where the city of Baltimore imposed a requirement that if you don't perform abortions, you have to tell your patient, they're not really patients at the pregnancy center, but you have to tell everyone who comes in your door, here is how you can get an abortion. And they said, look, we can't convey that information to the people we're serving. That sends the exact opposite message that we want to send. And so they had to bring a free speech claim, which we won. I want to keep moving to transgender. I hope you're all very familiar with the transgender mandate. So this, the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, prohibits discrimination in healthcare on the basis of sex. Great! Nobody thinks healthcare should be doled out in a discriminatory way based on sex. But at the end of the Obama administration, HHS promulgated a regulation redefining sex discrimination in healthcare to cover gender identity. And what it said in the regulation was, it gave an example. If you're a doctor and you'll perform a hysterectomy for a woman with uterine cancer, but you won't perform a hysterectomy for a woman who wants to transition to living as a man, you are guilty of sex discrimination because sex includes gender identity, and you're denying someone necessary health care, the hysterectomy, based solely on their gender identity. So you are a discriminator. And then it said, and this applies across the full range of healthcare services that might be needed by people suffering gender dysphoria. So puberty blockers, if you'll do puberty blockers for a child with precocious puberty, but you won't do it for a child whose parents want to transition them or delay their puberty, you're discriminating. If you'll do hormones for a woman in menopause or whoever needs hormones, but you won't do it, cross-sex hormones for someone who wants to transition, you are discriminating based on sex. And the penalties are, the federal government could strip you of all your Medicare and Medicaid funding, which can be many millions of dollars. You can be sued by your patients. You can be guilty of False Claims Act liability for telling the federal government you don't discriminate and receiving funds and then discriminating. So there are massive penalties associated with this mandate. And because the coverage is triggered by receiving Medicare or Medicaid funds, it applied, the government said, to virtually every doctor and hospital across the country. And so CMDA was the leading edge of the spear in fighting this mandate. You filed a lawsuit in Texas arguing that this new interpretation of the Affordable Care Act was unlawful and violated religious freedom. And you won. You got an injunction. Basically, the court telling the federal government, you are not allowed to interpret the Affordable Care Act this way with respect to CMDA or any of its 13,000 plus members nationwide. So every member of CMDA today is protected from this transgender mandate because of the lawsuit you filed, even while the mandate still stays on the books. And there are other doctors and hospitals, if they're not members of CMDA, that are still subject to this mandate. So there's still fighting that needs to go on. But you have struck a major blow and a major victory against the federal government in this area. The way the law works and federal courts work, they just decide cases between parties. So the plaintiff, the defendant, and here it was CMDA and its members against HHS. So if they want to bring their own lawsuit and defeat HHS, they can get the same protection that CMDA got. But the court generally isn't, a lot of people think that courts like strike down laws and like erase laws off the books, but that's not what courts actually do. They decide cases between particular parties. They may declare that applying the law to CMDA in this way is unconstitutional or illegal, but that really only protects CMDA. And so it wasn't that CMDA is doing something, selfish or only for it or for its members. It's just that the courts don't make the law for the country. The courts just resolve cases between parties. And so CMDA was the party, and CMDA is who gets protected. So the protection that the court gave is to CMDA and all its current and future members. So that's the transgender mandate. That's an example of government-based threat. In this area, we also, again, have all five or six of those areas where you have employers. I've spoken with doctors who've said, I had to change practices because they were asking me to participate in gender transitions. So doctors who are threatened with job loss if they won't toe the line on transgender issues. We've had multiple lawsuits by patients suing usually Catholic hospitals who've declined to do a hysterectomy or other gender transition procedure. This is another area where employees are a big source of conflict. I have a case right now on behalf of a Catholic hospital where an employee of the hospital wanted insurance coverage for their gender transition. The hospital can't do that because of their Catholic beliefs, and the employee has filed a complaint and is planning to file a lawsuit. And then another example where professional organizations are pushing so hard to transform the standard of care. I think WPATH is one of the main entities trying to push a standard of care that says, if you won't perform these things, you are engaged in malpractice. And obviously the media is pushing that narrative as well. I don't know if everybody was there for Farr Carlin last night, but you know, he's so right that we're not just asking for exemptions for our conscience to trump our patient. We're asking for the freedom to provide good medical care to our patients. But if you know WPATH and ACOG and the AMA, like if they have the entire field covered and they get sole power to define what the standard of care is, you know, it's so much harder to make that argument that we're just trying to carry out our professional responsibilities and provide good care to our patients. So we need CMDA, we need other organizations pushing on what the standard of care is and fighting back against the professional associations. I mean, you guys would know better than I do, but sometimes the law can tend to dictate where the standard of care heads. I mean, they probably both influence each other. Sometimes the law follows the standard of care, but I think a lot of the reason you see HHS pushing this at the federal level is they're trying to change the norms in the medical profession. These are ideologues within HHS who want to change the way medicine is practiced. And if they can make a nationwide federal law that says you are a sex discriminator if you won't provide this care, that starts to change hearts and minds within the medical profession and then results in, you know, AMA, ACOG, and other groups lining up, and it all feeds off of each other. A few years ago, though, the Supreme Court addressed the meaning of sex discrimination in Title VII, in employment discrimination, a case called Bostock, and it was a pretty big surprise ruling. The Supreme Court said that if you take an employment action on an employee based on their gender identity, that is sex discrimination. So there's some troubling Supreme Court precedent in this area that makes it a bit more of an uphill fight. So assisted suicide, and you know, CMDA is involved in litigation on this right now. It's not a case that Beckett is handling, I think ADF is handling it, but where California has legalized assisted suicide. What we're seeing, when states legalize assisted suicide, at least nowadays, they kind of have to package in conscience protections, you know, in order to get it through the legislature. They have to, you know, promise that it's all voluntary, that nobody will be forced to engage in it. But California then, after getting it on the books, started rolling back the conscience protections and ratcheting up the pressure on doctors, at the very least, to be involved in referring patients and kind of progressing them along the path toward assisted suicide. And so CMDA has brought a very important lawsuit there saying, you know, this is a violation of our free speech. You can't force us to engage in this type of practice to speed patients along the path toward assisted suicide. Likewise, you'll see employers, you know, state-run healthcare facilities. If you work in one of those in palliative care, oncology, geriatrics, I think you'll start to see, you know, these are patients that are costly. And you'll see employers start to pressure doctors in those fields to participate in assisted suicide at the risk of their job. And then I mentioned our case earlier. In Colorado, where it was actually an employee, a doctor who worked for the hospital and wanted to push the religious hospital toward participating in assisted suicide and sued their employer over that. So second main area I wanted to cover is just why does it matter? So Farr Carlin last night was talking about, you know, changing the narrative, but why does it matter to fight for the freedom to care here in the United States? First thing that comes to my mind is it enables doctors to continue practicing medicine in accordance with their conscience without moral injury, right? So it's good for doctors because you can continue your profession in accordance with your conscience. It's good for society because it prevents moral decay and strengthens the moral fabric of society, and it's good for patients because it enables you to provide the best possible care to your patients and maintain that trust doctor-patient relationship. And I know missions, medical missions, is at the heart of CMDA. And I was thinking about this because, you know, Mike was telling me about how when he took this position and was coming here from Kenya, the doctors there were saying, like, I don't know what's going on with your country. But I think there's a way to think of this, you know, why the freedom to care matters is that our country is a mission field right now. It's not a mission field in the sense that if you have a cleft palate, you can't get treatment for it. That's one form of mission. But like, mission is not just, it's not just preaching the gospel, and it's not just providing care where care is unavailable. We have decay in this society. We have mothers who think that the only way to have a fulfilling life is to kill the unborn child within them. We have children who think the only way to have a meaningful life is to cut off healthy organs and radically transform their body in unhealthy ways. And we have grandparents and elderly who think they're a burden on society and the best thing they can do is end their life early. And then we have society telling them, you're right. Yeah, you're right. You do need to kill your child. You do need to cut off your healthy organs. You do need to end your life. And then we have doctors and professional organizations in authority, the AMA, saying, you're right. You didn't need to end that life. And so who is going to tell them? You know, who is going to tell them otherwise? It's you. And it's the doctors who will practice in accordance with conscience and say, I love you too much to speed you down this path that's ultimately harmful to you. And if you're not free to do that, if the law threatens you with the loss of your job or the shutting down of your practice, I mean, I was speaking with an Orthodox Jewish doctor 2 days ago about these issues, and he said a lot of Orthodox Jews, they don't go into surgery because they know they're going to be confronted with these issues. And if Christians are and other people of faith are exiting the field because they're afraid of, you know, these types of conflicts, that just gives even more power to the AMA and to all the voices in society that are saying you need to end these lives, you need to harm yourself in order to help yourself. So, you know, one way to think of this is as a mission field. This is one of the CMDA missionary endeavors to our own home society. I know I'm low on time, so I wanted to just indulge. I haven't done a lot of like lecturing, but I wanted to tell you why I think CMDA is so critical in this fight. Start with the transgender mandate. When the Obama administration promulgated this regulation saying doctors and hospitals across the country have to perform gender transitions or be guilty of sex discrimination, it wasn't an issue top of mind in society the way it is now. A lot of people didn't really see this coming or believe it was coming. And I've lost count of the number of conversations I had with doctors and clinics saying, look at this new regulation. This is deeply troubling. This will harm your organization. You know, I'm not itching. I'm a lawyer, but I'm not like itching for a fight, but like you need to go on the offensive, because if we let this thing stand, doctors and hospitals across the country are going to be harmed by this transgender mandate. And I've lost count of the number of conversations where people said, I'm sorry, I don't want to be involved in a lawsuit. I don't blame them. These are busy doctors or people running clinics. Like, you don't want to be in a lawsuit. Nobody wants to be in a lawsuit. That's totally understandable. But there's, you know, nobody wants to be the first to kind of stick their head above the parapet and get shot at by the federal government, by the hostile media, by, you know, patients, or, you know, there's reputational risk. So there's so much risk in stepping forward in this area, particularly in the litigation realm. And CMDA was the first organization that I talked to that said, yes, this is important. Yes, we need to take a stand. It was Dave Stevens at the time, but then when Mike came along, you know, just as affirmative or even more forceful, yes, this is important. But CMDA has already cultivated a network of courageous healthcare practitioners, and they joined CMDA in part because they have this courage and they care about these issues. CMDA has a real advantage in having a network of courageous providers who are willing to stick their head above the parapet and take some flak and take some fire, and that protects everybody behind them in their wake who may not have been willing to stand up. So those are just a few of the key ways that like CMDA itself litigating has such a benefit. Even beyond that, like you don't always have to be the one to bring the lawsuit. When the federal government tried to roll back the Trump era conscience regulations that are so important, the state of New York, Planned Parenthood, they sued the Trump administration, right? So it's New York State and Planned Parenthood against the Trump administration. But as we all know, the Trump administration is not forever. Administrations change. They don't always do the right thing. So CMDA intervened in that lawsuit as a party alongside the Trump administration and really had the effect of keeping the administration honest, making sure the administration made all the arguments that it should have been making, and avoid any sort of situation where the government, you know, when President Biden gets elected, the lawsuit just evaporates. I mean, because CMDA is in that lawsuit is still out there and still having an effect. So you can have an effect by bringing lawsuits, you can have an effect by intervening in lawsuits, you can have an effect with amicus briefs, but litigation is just one area. There's legislation and regulation, and you've already had a huge impact on the conscience reg at the federal level. You're having impact on state legislation, and there's so much that CMDA can do uniquely in the field of legislation and regulation. Public messaging is key, and who's gonna be, you know, when there's a lawsuit over the transgender mandate, who's gonna go on TV and talk about this issue? Not a lawyer. I mean, I can talk about how these procedures can be harmful to patients, but I don't have credibility to do that. We need trained and credible doctors and healthcare professionals who can talk about the reasons why the freedom to care is so important, not some litigious lawyer. I hope this has been helpful. I mean, the threats are real. The threats are manifold, they're active, they're growing, but we can fight back. I mean, we are winning these lawsuits. We won a major lawsuit against the transgender mandate. We have a court system that's very friendly to religious freedom. And so you have a key role to play in this area. I wanna thank you for being willing to step up on the transgender mandate. CMDA has just been golden on advocating for these issues, and I hope you'll continue to do so because it is a mission field and you do have a unique role to play. Thank you.
Well, just to give you a look into Luke Goodrich's heart, at the end of that presentation, our board chair asked Luke, how can CMDA pray for you? He gave a couple of requests, and then he finished by saying, what I really would like you to pray for, CMDA, is to pray for humility on my part and those who work with me, because we have had so many victories in federal court that it would be easy for us to become proud. Would you pray that we will remain humble, listening to God as we continue to advocate for you? That really touched my heart. Would you pray for Luke for that, as he represents CMDA and many other religious entities in the United States, that God will direct he and his co-workers in this very important work? Well, if you listened to last week's episode of CMDA Matters, you heard me talking about the recent victory that we had in federal court in the transgender mandate case. So I was glad to hear Luke go into more depth and detail about that case in his presentation during today's episode. If you'd like more information about that case, just go to cmda.org/transgender mandate. You'll find a fact sheet that you can download and even share with your healthcare colleagues to tell them about this important case. You know, the protections offered by this case, they protect both current and future members of CMDA. So this is a great way to encourage your colleagues to join CMDA now. Just as Luke pointed out, CMDA is a network of courageous Christians in healthcare. As Luke explained, we joined this lawsuit back in 2016 because we saw the great need as well as the great potential of discrimination against Christians in healthcare. And that's why one of our major arenas of focus here at CMDA within our advocacy department is protecting your conscience freedoms in healthcare. We join cases like this on the federal level and on the state level. Plus, we also engage in state legislative efforts to secure these same protections in individual states. Our advocacy team is working with coalitions on the ground in states like Nebraska, Florida, Kentucky, Montana, and others to introduce the Medical Ethics and Diversity Act, which will protect conscience freedoms for healthcare professionals in those particular states. I also hope that you will take a few minutes and visit freedomtocare.org. That's freedom, the numeral 2, care.org. It's the hub for CMDA's advocacy work. There you will find resources, ways to get involved, information about active federal bills that we are tracking, and much more. Freedom to Care is focused on educating, encouraging, and equipping you to advocate for First Amendment religious and conscience freedoms. We do that by enabling healthcare professionals to uphold life-honoring principles found within traditional Hippocratic medical ethics. If you'd like more information, just visit freedomtocare.org. In addition to our work on the topic of conscience freedoms, we are also working with local partners and CMDA members in states around the country to support bills that protect minors from gender transition therapies and surgeries. We're fighting against bills that legalize assisted suicide. We're opposing new legislation that would give wider access to abortion services. It's the three main issues that Luke pointed out today at the beginning of his presentation: abortion, transgender, as well as assisted suicide. One of the ways that you can get involved is through CMDA's advocacy department, which focuses on advocating for your right to practice conscientiously when it comes to issues like these: assisted suicide or abortion, transgenderism, and others. Through a network of volunteers and other like-minded organizations, we have boots on the ground across our country to fight against the tidal wave of legislative and cultural changes in both federal and state arenas that are facing Christians in healthcare. We need your help to promote our biblically based Christian worldview in all 50 states. If you'd like to get involved, contact CMDA's advocacy and communications team by using the email address advocacy@cmda.org. Incidentally, if you have faced discrimination at work from your religious convictions, we want to know about it, and we want to walk through that journey with you. You can share your story by that same email address using advocacy@cmda.org. We at CMDA are increasingly being called upon by the national media to give our perspective on the topics that I just mentioned. From congressional testimony to network television, God continues to open doors for CMDA to amplify the voice of Christian healthcare professionals on the critical life issues of our day. If you're interested, I encourage you to attend our upcoming Voice of CMDA media training on August 18th and 19th, 2023. This is a two-day training and is designed to teach you how to use the media as an educational tool, as well as to sharpen your skills as a CMDA media representative. We will use real-life examples in order to share a proven methodology that works even in the most hostile situations. Plus, we will explore how advocacy and media work hand-in-hand together, and how to prepare to use your media skills to testify in your state legislature. You know, participation is limited to only 12 attendees so that we can provide one-on-one training. So visit cmda.org/events now to reserve your space today. And before we close, here's one additional announcement for you.
Are you ready to live missionally as a healthcare student, trainee, or professional? Registration is now open for Remedy 23, Healthcare on Mission, which will be held on February 24th and 25th at California Baptist University and on April 14th and 15th at Liberty University. Missional living in healthcare has always involved swimming upstream, but it seems to be getting harder. Our culture, workplaces, and institutions are not as friendly to faith as they once were. Living on mission for Jesus and setting biblical principles as our true north can be hard. Remedy 23 will challenge you to grow in your understanding of what missional living looks like. For some, Missional living will ultimately involve a plane ride to move to a far-off place for long-term service. For others, missional living happens in our own communities, institutions, and workplaces here in the U.S. What does it look like for you? Join us for Remedy 23 and find out. For more information and to register, visit cmda.org/remedy.
Well, next week, I'm joined by Mr. Ryan Bomberger from the Radiance Foundation. Ryan has such a great personal story to share about the importance of human dignity. And Ryan is a special guest at our upcoming 2023 CMDA National Convention. He's going to give a brief preview of what he'll be sharing at the convention, as well as giving you some insight into his own remarkable personal story. We really appreciate hearing from you, our regular listeners who've been inspired or challenged or encouraged by one of our guests. As we close, I wanted to share this testimony that we received recently from a regular podcast listener who's a CMDA member from Texas. And she said, "There have been so many days that I have listened to your podcast on my morning commute, and I have felt renewed and inspired, as well as encouraged to keep up the good fight. I thank you for the work that you do, CMDA, the personal sacrifices that you each have made to bring the Christian voice to healthcare, and for your much needed perspective." What a wonderful testimony about the wonderful work that CMDA, as well as our 13,000 members, do around the world in order to bring the hope and healing of Jesus Christ to the world. That's what matters to CMDA. And I pray, friends, that CMDA will continue to matter until Jesus comes back to get us and to take us home someday. Soon, I hope. We'll see you next week, friends, right here, if Jesus does tarry a little longer.
This podcast has been a production of the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. The opinions expressed by guests on this podcast are not necessarily endorsed by the Christian Medical and Dental Associations. CMDA is a nonpartisan organization that does not endorse political parties or candidates for public office. The views expressed on this podcast reflect judgments regarding principles and values held by CMDA and its members, and are not intended to imply endorsement of any political party or candidate.